"Why did you bring me away, sir?" said I, when we had passed out of earshot of this unhappy ghost. "It might take a long while, that conversation," said my teacher, "and you have heard enough to see what the choice is."
"Is there any hope for her, sir?"
"Aye, there's some. What she calls her love for her son has turned into a poor, prickly, astringent sort of thing. But there's still a wee spark of something that's not just herself in it. That might be blown into a flame."
"Then some natural feelings are really better than others. I mean, are a better starting point for the real thing?"
"Better and worse. There's something in natural affection which will lead it on to eternal love more easily than natural appetite could be led on. But there's also something in it which makes it easier to stop at the natural level and mistake it for the heavenly. Brass is mistaken for gold more easily than clay is, and if it finally refuses conversion, its corruption will be worse than the corruption of what you call the lower passions. It is a stronger angel, and therefore, when it falls, a fiercer devil."
"I don't know that I dare repeat this on earth, sir," said I. "They'd say I was inhuman. They'd say I believed in total depravity. They'd say I was attacking the best and the holiest things. They'd call me—"
"It might do you no harm if they did," said he with, I really thought, a twinkle in his eye.
"But could one dare—could one have the face to go to a bereaved mother in her misery when one's not bereaved oneself?"
"No, no, son. That's no office of yours. You're not a good enough man for that. When your own heart's been broken, it will be time for you to think of talking. But someone must say in general what's been unsaid among you this many a year, that love, as mortals understand the word, isn't enough. Every natural love will rise again and live forever in this country, but none will rise again until it has been buried."
"The saying is almost too hard for us."
"Ah, but it's cruel not to say it. They that know have grown afraid to speak. That is why sorrows that used to purify now only fester."
"Keats was wrong, then, when he said he was certain of the holiness of the heart's affections."
"I doubt if he knew clearly what he meant. But you and I must be clear. There is but one good, and that is God. Everything else is good when it looks to him, and bad when it turns from him. And the higher and mightier it is in the natural order, the more demoniac it will be if it rebels. It's not out of bad mice or bad fleas you make demons, but out of bad archangels. The false religion of lust is baser than the false religion of mother love, or patriotism, or art. But lust is less likely to be made into a religion. But look."
I saw coming towards us a ghost who carried something on his shoulder. Like all the ghosts, he was unsubstantial, but they differed from one another as smokes differ. Some had been whitish. This one was dark and oily. What sat on his shoulder was a little red lizard, and it was twitching its tail like a whip and whispering things in his ear. As we caught sight of him, he turned his head to the reptile with a snarl of impatience.
"Shut up, I tell you," he said.
It wagged its tail and continued to whisper to him. He ceased snarling and presently began to smile. Then he turned and started to limp westward, away from the mountains.
"Off so soon?" said a voice.
The speaker was more or less human in shape, but larger than a man, and so bright that I could hardly look at him. His presence smote on my eyes and on my body, too, for there was heat coming from him as well as light, like the morning sun at the beginning of a tyrannous summer day.
"Yes, I'm off," said the ghost. "Thanks for all your hospitality, but it's no good, you see. I told this little chap—here he indicated the lizard—that he'd have to be quiet if he came, which he insisted on doing. Of course his stuff won't do here, I realise that, but he won't stop. I shall just have to go home."
"Would you like me to make him quiet?" said the flaming spirit.
An angel, as I now understood.
"Of course I would," said the ghost.
"Then I will kill him," said the angel, taking a step forward.
"Look out! You're burning me! Keep away!" said the ghost, retreating.
"Don't you want him killed?"
"You didn't say anything about killing him at first. I hardly meant to bother you with anything so drastic as that."
"It's the only way," said the angel, whose burning hands were now very close to the lizard. "Shall I kill it?"
Well, that's a further question. I'm quite open to consider it, but it's a new point, isn't it? I mean, for the moment, I was only thinking about silencing it, because up here, well, it's so damned embarrassing.
May I kill it?
Well, there's time to discuss that later.
There is no time. May I kill it?
Please, I never meant to be such a nuisance. Please, really, don't bother. Look, it's gone to sleep of its own accord. I'm sure it'll be all right now. Thanks ever so much.
May I kill it?
Honestly, I don't think there's the slightest necessity for that. I'm sure I shall be able to keep it in order now. I think the gradual process would be far better than killing it.
The gradual process is of no use at all.
Don't you think so? Well, I'll think over what you've said very carefully. I honestly will. In fact, I'd let you kill it now, but as a matter of fact, I'm not feeling frightfully well today. It would be silly to do it now. I'd need to be in good health for the operation. Some other day, perhaps.
There is no other day. All days are present now.
Get back! You're burning me. How can I tell you to kill it? You'd kill me if you did.
It is not so.
Why, you're hurting me now.
I never said it wouldn't hurt you. I said it wouldn't kill you.
Oh, I know. You think I'm a coward. But it isn't that. Really, it isn't. I say, let me run back by tonight's bus and get an opinion from my own doctor. I'll come again the first moment I can.
This moment contains all moments.
Why are you torturing me? You're jeering at me. How can I let you tear me to pieces? If you wanted to help me, why didn't you kill the damn thing without asking me, before I knew? It would be all over by now if you had.
I cannot kill it against your will. It is impossible. Have I your permission?
The angel's hands were almost closed on the lizard, but not quite. Then the lizard began chattering to the ghost, so loud that even I could hear what it was saying. Be careful, it said. He can do what he says. He can kill me. One fatal word from you, and he will. Then you'll be without me, forever and ever. It's not natural. How could you live? You'd be only a sort of ghost, not a real man as you are now. He doesn't understand. He's only a cold, bloodless, abstract thing. It may be natural for him, but it isn't for us. Yes, yes. I know there are no real pleasures now, only dreams. But aren't they better than nothing? And I'll be so good. I admit I've sometimes gone too far in the past, but I promise I won't do it again. I'll give you nothing but really nice dreams, all sweet and fresh and almost innocent. You might say quite innocent.
Have I your permission? Said the angel to the ghost.
I know it will kill me.
It won't. But supposing it did?
You're right. It would be better to be dead than to live with this creature.
Then I may?
Damn and blast you! Go on, can't you? Get it over. Do what you like, bellowed the ghost, but ended whimpering, God help me! God help me! Next moment, the ghost gave a scream of agony such as I never heard on earth. The burning one closed his crimson grip on the reptile, twisted it while it bit and writhed, and then flung it, broken-backed, on the turf. Oh! That's done for me, gasped the ghost, reeling backwards. For a moment I could make out nothing distinctly. Then I saw, between me and the nearest bush, unmistakably solid but growing every moment solider, the upper arm and the shoulder of a man. Then, brighter still and stronger, the legs and hands. The neck and golden head materialized while I watched, and if my attention had not wavered, I should have seen the actual completing of a man, an immense man, naked, not much smaller than the angel. What distracted me was the fact that at the same moment something seemed to be happening to the lizard. At first I thought the operation had failed. So far from dying, the creature was still struggling and even growing bigger as it struggled. And as it grew, it changed. Its hinder parts grew rounder. The tail, still flickering, became a tail of hair that flickered between huge and glossy buttocks. Suddenly I started back, rubbing my eyes. What stood before me was the greatest stallion I have ever seen, silvery white but with mane and tail of gold. It was smooth and shining, rippled with swells of flesh and muscle, whinnying and stamping with its hooves. At each stamp the land shook and the trees dindled. The new-made man turned and clapped the new horse's neck. It nosed his bright body. Horse and master breathed each into the other's nostrils. The man turned from it, flung himself at the feet of the burning one, and embraced them. When he rose, I thought his face shone with tears, but it may have been only the liquid love and brightness, one cannot distinguish them in that country, which flowed from him. I had not long to think about it. In joyous haste the young man leapt upon the horse's back. Turning in his seat, he waved a farewell, then nudged the stallion with his heels. They were off before I well knew what was happening. There was riding, if you like. I came out as quickly as I could from among the bushes to follow them with my eyes, but already they were only like a shooting star far off on the green plain and soon among the foothills of the mountains. Then, still like a star, I saw them winding up, scaling what seemed impossible steeps, and quicker every moment till near the dim brow of the landscape, so high that I must strain my neck to see them, they vanished, bright themselves, into the rose brightness of that everlasting morning. While I still watched, I noticed that the whole plain and forest were shaking with a sound which in our world would be too large to hear, but there I could take it with joy. I knew it was not the solid people who were singing. It was the voice of that earth, those woods, and those waters. A strange, archaic, inorganic noise that came from all directions at once. The nature, or arch-nature, of that land rejoiced to have been once more ridden, and therefore consummated, in the person of the horse. It sang, "The master says to our master, come up. Share my rest and splendour, till all natures that were your enemies become slaves to dance before you, and backs for you to ride, and firmness for your feet to rest on. From beyond all place and time, out of the very place, authority will be given you. The strengths that once opposed your will shall be obedient fire in your blood and heavenly thunder in your voice. Overcome us, that so overcome we may be ourselves. We desire the beginning of your reign as we desire dawn and dew, wetness at the birth of light. Master, your master has appointed you forever to be our king of justice and our high priest."
"Do you understand all this, my son?" said the teacher.
"I don't know about all, sir," said I. "Am I right in thinking the lizard really turned into the horse?"
"Aye, but it was killed first. You'll not forget that part of the story."
"I'll try not to, sir. But does it mean that everything that is in us can go on to the mountains?"
"Nothing, not even the best and noblest, can go on as now is. Nothing, not even what is lowest and most bestial, will not be raised again if it submits to death. It is sown a natural body, it is raised a spiritual body. Flesh and blood cannot come to the mountains. Not because they are too rank, but because they are too weak. What is a lizard compared with a stallion? Lust is a poor, weak, whimpering, whispering thing compared with that richness and energy of desire which will arise when lust has been killed."
"But am I to tell them at home that this man's sensuality proved less of an obstacle than that poor woman's love for her son? For that was, at any rate, an excess of love."
"You'll tell them no such thing," he replied sternly. "Excess of love, did you say? There was no excess. There was defect. She loved her son too little, not too much. If she had loved him more, there'd be no difficulty. I do not know how her affair will end, but it may well be that at this moment she's demanding to have him down with her in hell. That kind is sometimes perfectly ready to plunge the soul they say they love in endless misery, if only they can still in some fashion possess it. No, no. You must draw another lesson. You must ask if the risen body, even of appetite, is as grand a horse as you saw. What would the risen body of maternal love or friendship be?"
But once more my attention was diverted. "Is there another river, sir?" I asked.